Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to talk about OpenWRT, the embedded Linux software that you can put on all sorts of devices and do all sorts of things. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 265, recorded September 18th, 2013. OpenWRT. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. Back in the big seat, back with the big mic, ready to take over the helm once again after a couple week absence. Thank you all guys that took care of my shows while I was away. I was in New York for a week, and I was in Atlanta for a weekend, and I was busy flying during last week's show, so it wouldn't be possible for me to do that. And that's actually all made possible because I have this wonderful panel of rotating co-hosts, one of which is here actually in the Twit studio today. Aaron Newcomb, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. I would rotate, but I'm sitting down. It's kind of hard to to rotate around, but that's about as far as I can go. Sorry.
It's okay. Well, it's the whole panel that rotates us. So it's not just you.
Okay.
And maybe they rotate around you. You don't really know. I mean, it's kind of the way that is. It's kind of cool. So let me get my notes here. We have a really good show. By the way, I'm back in Los Angeles, and I'm sitting here on the 13th floor of the Howard Hughes building in Westchester, place where I have a ongoing contract. Last time I talked, I said, well, it's all over. But nope, they actually renewed me all the way through January. So I'm very happy for that because money is better than no money. So that's always kind of handy. We have a great guest today. His name is, I hope I pronounced this right, Gregers Peterson. He's going to be Skyping into us from Copenhagen. I've been to Copenhagen a couple times. And he's going to be talking about the OpenWRT project, which is... I'm sort of familiar with DDWRT, and this is probably some sort of fork of that. We'll have to ask him about that. And what that basically does is, at least in its original instance, it was to take the Linksys 54WRT, something like that, router, and reflash it with smarter software, so you could do a lot more things with it than just the original design spec. And I actually had a router that was flashed with this stuff to build a portal once years ago, I guess it was. So I'm a little familiar with it. I even downloaded a copy of OpenWRT, and I'm running it inside VirtualBox, so I was playing with that a little bit. What do you know about this, Aaron?
I've been playing around with DDWRT. I actually loaded it on my router at home because I was having some issues where the router would lock up just randomly. It was obviously a firmware issue, or seemed to be, because as soon as you'd reset it, unplug the power, plug it back in, it'd be fine for a while. And then it seemed like it was hitting some sort of limit, maybe an error limit. It was getting some random error, hitting a limit, and the firmware was just locking up. So I tried DDWRT for a little bit there. I had a couple issues, and so I'm actually kind of anxious to find out if maybe OpenWRT will work where DDWRT did not. So I've got some questions I want to ask our guest.
Very good. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring our guest on. Gregers Peterson, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, great. And was I right? Are you speaking to us from Copenhagen?
Yeah, I am. And I'm really happy to be here. It's been quite a while to kind of get this scheduled, but I'm happy that we managed to fix some stuff together. So very good.
And so who's I gave sort of an overview, as just heard a moment ago, of what I think this project is about. But let's hear it from the source. What is OpenWRT and what problem is it solving?
I think OpenWRT has actually this year its 10th birthday. Wow. So we are a project which goes back in like what would be ancient times. And I have to say I haven't been with the project since their early beginnings, but I've been here for 5, 6, 7 years. So, my role in the project is as relationship manager. I try to keep track of what people are doing and try to help with getting communication going. And I also do some help with other technical aspects. So I'm kind of trying to keep relations flowing and building some new ones. But back to the original history of OpenWRT is that it came out of, as some other projects came out of the original release of the Linksys WRT54G source code. Mm-hmm. And that was like a beginning, which eventually over a shorter time period turned into the first known release from OpenWRT, which was White Russian, which was still based on parts of the original, in the beginning of the original Linksys code, but then moved on to being a complete independent project, which pulled code like kernel code and other source codes directly from related projects. This has moved on and developed over time, you know, the move to a 2.6 kernel, and right now we are working on or moving towards a 3.12 kernel. So we are trying to really stay on the forefront of the development. And in that sense, we are in some ways a more in our trunk release, we are a more experimental project, but we also have a strong focus on stable releases with our most recent, which is attitude adjustment. And we are right now working on getting a new release called Barrier Breaker ready.
So let's go back to, just in case people aren't familiar with what the Linksys 54G router was, actually still is. They still have that model out, I think, if I'm correct. When would I have used this router, and why do we want to put different software on it from what it gets in, you know, from the box?
In the beginning, the 54G was rather flaky. You had a very limited... Yeah, it kind of didn't really do what they promised. So you ended up having to say, okay, I want to have something with a different functionality. I want to be able to run a different application. I want to be able to run a VPN, like an OpenVPN client on it. Or you had, depending on who you are and your technical knowledge and your needs, you had different requirements. And it was just a way that OpenWRT project just realized that this is what we can do. We can work with the embedded platform, and we can extend it, and we can actually make it stable and functional. And so in the beginning, it was about simply just getting a stable system running with a usable web interface. And this had moved on to that we are currently are looking at a complete rewrite of the user land. We are implemented a new functionality. We have a highly extendable web interface, and it's more about for us. It's about making it possible for users, but also for other groups to be able to create a solution which fits them with OpenWRT as an embedded base, if you can talk it, and if you can state it in that way, so that OpenWRT is more an embedded Linux distribution for network-connected devices.
And by embedded there, you mean today. You're talking about the fact that the original 54G routers didn't actually have any disk. It was just some amount of flash RAM, and it would boot from it that.
I think you still have a distinction when you talk about embedded as something which doesn't have a screen, but. Right now, we are also talking about embedded devices as our like Android phones and media players and audio devices. So basically, anything which has a non-desktop small CPU with some limited resources, which would be like limited disk space, flash space, or limited RAM. I can say that. Currently, OpenWRT supports devices which have from 4 megabytes of flash and upwards, and from 16 megabytes of RAM and upwards. But if you look at current like devices like routers, you will find that a lot of these have like 64 megabits of flash and 128 megabytes of RAM. And so you've constantly have an extension of the physical resources in the devices. But it's still a small CPU, single kernel very often. But this is again changing. You see more complex systems with multi-core systems or with multi-CPU systems. So things are very changing right now.
And this started on the 54G, which is, I don't remember the architecture of the processor, but I now it's a MIPS, okay. But I now see that it's been ported to like x86 and a bunch of other architectures. How has that helped the use of it?
What our approach is that we want a uniform platform, we want a uniform system which can be deployed on a large number of platforms. Mm-hmm. So in that way that if you choose one of the, I think we have like support, it's not stable support, but partly we have stable support for like 25, 30 platforms, and we have like unstable work in progress support or for maybe 10 or 15 other platforms. But if you manage to get OpenWRT installed on whatever platform you have, it will look the same. You will have the same functionality, and you'll be able to do basically the same modifications and changes, but also work in the same way with the system, which is a huge potential, because you'll say, okay, I know how to work with OpenWRT on a MIPS CPU. Mm-hmm. But if I try to work with OpenWRT on an x86 CPU, it will still be the same system I work with.
Now, this is the kind of thing that I could probably put on a thumb drive and boot up any x86 box, like maybe even in a internet cafe. So I'm not using their software, I'm just using mine. Is that possible to do with this?
You can install an X server and a graphical user interface, graphical desktop on OpenWRT by now. We have support for Qt. We had an old project a couple of years ago. We worked closely with the OpenMoco developers, where we had an actually working edition of OpenMoco running on top of OpenWRT. Hmm. You can extend OpenWRT in a lot of different directions. I've also seen solutions with OpenWRT and OpenFlow for like enterprise class switches, like homemade enterprise class switches. So there's just huge potential in working with the project we work on.
So this thing still has to scale all the way down, but it sounds like you can also scale all the way up. It's not a complete Linux system at the smallest scale, though. I mean, it wouldn't have like my normal bash and my hundreds of utilities and /bin. What am I giving up at the minimal install?
It depends on what you need. If you need a router which forwards packages and filters it and gives you this basic functionality that you can control DHCP, that you can maybe mount a shared drive which is connected via USB, things like that. You can also, within the limited capability of these small systems, you can also implement an audio system. You can have a DLNA media server running. Mm-hmm. So basically the whole system is very small, and the packages are similarly very small. But of course, you can't get everything. You can't get like, I want to run Blender on this, which is just doesn't work. It's not intended for that. Mm-hmm. So it's very much about tailoring your system for your needs.
So, Gregers, can you help me out here? Because even, I was talking to John this morning about this, and we were having trouble figuring out what's the difference in OpenWRT and some of the other WRT projects out there, like DDWRT seems to be very popular. That's the one I tried earlier. What's the difference between these projects, and where did they, did one come from the other? Who started what? What does the ecosystem look like at this
point?
I think
the ecosystem in some degrees came from the same root, which was the Linksys, the original Linksys sources. But they've very much changed over time. Some of the distributions which were, what can we call, age mates of OpenWRT have stopped. They haven't continued development, or they have gone into a very limited path where they only support a few sets of devices. DDWRT is a commercial product, in all respect for that. But OpenWRT is an open project. We are making our source code and our solutions freely available. And we just simply have a much broader intention than some of the other projects. And that intention is a flexible, stable, and extendable embedded Linux operating system.
Right. So it sounds like there's some philosophical differences, but what about functionality differences? Like, what is there something I can do with DDWRT that I can't do with OpenWRT, or vice versa?
DDWRT is more limited. It's mainly focused on wireless routers. So, and mainly focused on a limited number of wireless routers. And they have a web interface for the general use, so it's a much narrower commercial product.
Yeah.
And again, OpenWRT is very much focused on being extendable and able to support a lot of different interests and a lot of different approaches to what can a device be. And I can say in that sense, I know that there are a number of very interesting high-end audio devices which are in the pipeline for the next coming future.
Right. So let me get back to my question I was talking to Randall about then. Do you think I should go back with DDWRT? I had a problem because I couldn't get my WAN connection working, to Comcast, which is my local internet provider here. So I tried to get the WAN connection working, and I read all the forums, did everything. I was running DDWRT, couldn't get it to work. Finally, I just upgraded the firmware to the latest supported firmware. This is a TP-Link router for anyone that's curious. And that seems to be working better, but I'd still rather be running an open system, more extensible system on my router. Do you think I should go back and try OpenWRT, or do you think I might have the same issues?
No,
that's
kind of a softball
question, right?
Yeah. I would say if it's a TP-Link device, it is probably a Qualcomm Atheros-based chipset and with the specific drivers. And I can say that a number of the core OpenWRT developers are very closely taking part in the development work of these drivers, and a very, very stable support for these chipsets. So I would, of course, and this again speaking as a member of OpenWRT, I would, of course, check out OpenWRT. We have features like there's a fail-safe mode. We have an intention that if we say a device is stable, supported, it is stable, and it will offer that the functionality that you expect.
And in terms of, let's say things don't work, in terms of going back to the original firmware, is that a pretty straightforward and easy process?
Typically, you'll be able to, if you've installed OpenWRT, you will simply be able to go to the web interface and upload the original default firmware.
Right.
And flash it that way, like using the automatic flash function.
Okay, good. So that doesn't change much.
No, because what we tend to do is to have the original firmware from the vendor look the same as the OpenWRT firmware. so that it to the box itself, it will look the same. It will just be two very different systems that emerge after a refresh.
Right, right. So one of the things that for folks that watch this show or some of the other shows that I do on the Twit Network, you'll know I'm into open hardware. And so when you say that you can run this on more than just routers, my ears kind of perked up at that point. Can I run this on a Raspberry Pi? I know Wanderer in the chat room was saying that it runs on the Arduino Yun. But I'm thinking, I've got three or four Raspberry Pis sitting around the house. Can I turn a Raspberry Pi into, an alternate router at this point in my house? How easy is that?
You can. You can even install, as I said earlier, you can install a graphical user interface, a graphical desktop, because you can run X on OpenWRT. So you'll be able to run it as a media player. You'll be able to also say you wanted to do some... What can we imagine? You wanted to run a small web server. You need that for something. And you can do that with OpenWRT. But as you mentioned, the Arduino Yun, it's also a very interesting little project which emerges right now. And we are ourselves quite fond of it. Because again, it extends the potential of the Arduino community.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, for example, for my particular situation, I bought a repeater recently, right? Which is, I think it cost me maybe $40, $50, and it has a single Ethernet port on it, and it just basically sets up an identical SSID in your home, so that when you wander around, you can connect from. I had one place where I couldn't connect, and couldn't reach
roaming.
My router. Yeah, exactly. So. I'm thinking, man, if I could buy a Raspberry Pi for $35 and get a little dongle, a little Wi-Fi dongle, and set this up in the house, maybe I could do the same thing. And I'd rather do it that way than going out and buying a TP-Link product or a Linksys product or a Cisco product, right?
You can. It's not a big problem. And I'm pretty sure that there is... quite a number of individuals who have already done it. So there will be the classical, do a small internet search and you will find help. Or you can go to the support forums of OpenWRT. We both have a user forum, but we also have several IRC channels, which are public. So
yeah,
there will always be someone to help.
Right.
But again, in terms of the Raspberry Pi as a simple repeater, it's a little bit overpowered, to be honest. You can do a lot more with that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. So another question I had is I saw this runs on Android devices as well. Is that true?
We have a project where we've actually substituted the underlying Linux part of Android with an OpenWRT system. So we've kind of cut away the underlying system and put like the icing on top of this, which is the Android interface. So it actually works. I know one of the other developers got it to a point where he could make phone calls and run it. So generally speaking, the hardware on which Android runs is mainly supported by OpenWRT already.
So he had access to the Wi-Fi hardware inside the phone and could connect to things, and even access to the cellular radio as well.
He did some hacking, so he had some things running.
Nice.
That's great. Now, what about? I wanted to ask you, since this is more this project is a little broader than other projects like DDWRT, what kind of things have people done with OpenWRT? Where is it being used that may be unusual, or you might not realize that OpenWRT is running?
What can I say? It already runs in a lot of basic devices you see, but there are a number of people who have used it for robots and robot planes, also these quad choppers, what are they called? These quad propeller helicopter thingies, aerials. It's I know there's been some experimenting with car infotainment systems. I don't think there's one in production, but I know there's been some heavily interested in that. Again, a lot of basic devices. I know some, like home control manufacturers, are using OpenWRT as base for their solutions. You know, these the smart home approach, where you can like control electricity and heating and surveillance cameras and so forth.
Is there ever any difficulty? This is a question from the chat room, actually. Is there any difficulty running OpenWRT on devices that maybe aren't necessarily open devices, aren't meant for it? Does the licensing involved, does that ever come into play in terms of loading OpenWRT on an embedded system that maybe?
The thing is that if you buy it, this is my personal point of view. If you buy a device from a commercial vendor, it's your device, and you're free to do with it what you want. If I can get access to, in some way, to talk to the CPU and to the hardware which is on it and install OpenWRT on it, it's fine.
Yeah, for personal use.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think the real problem would come into maybe if you wanted to buy a bunch of cheap Linksys routers or something and then resell them, and put OpenWRT on them and resell them as whatever, you know, Joe Schmo's white box.
I know there. Yeah, but right now there are some smaller companies and individuals who are doing it the other way around, in that they contact the actual manufacturers who make the devices for a company like Linksys, the OEMs, and ask them, can you sell me 1,000 of this device in a white box? And then they install OpenWRT on it and sell them.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, and it's exactly the same hardware. And that's, again, what you see across the board, is that the hardware in something like wireless routers is very often close to it identical.
Right. They all run the same chipsets underneath, right? So, like my TP-Link routers, I think run the Atheros, or I don't know how to say it, Atheros chipset.
Right now, Atheros was bought by Qualcomm, so now they're officially called Qualcomm Atheros.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go. It's nice to have someone in the know for these kinds of things. There's also Broadcom chipsets and other chipsets. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, you really have to do a little bit of research, right, when you're thinking about setting this up. Yeah. What type of chipset is at the heart of this device? And really, is that chipset, that version of that particular vendor's chipset, supported?
Yeah. And I think that's actually a very important question, because what you start looking at there is again, something which is also about philosophy, but also about politics, because some of these chipset vendors don't release open drivers. They release binary blobs, which are sometimes what they call functional on Linux, or you have reverse engineered drivers for chipsets. And so in that sense, it is actually really important to look at what type of hardware is inside the device you're looking at buying.
Right. And I know both DDWRT and OpenWRT have support matrices, basically, that say, is this model of this particular vendor's router or whatever the device happens to be, supported with you know, either one of those, DDWRT or OpenWRT. Yeah. Both projects are very good about detailing specifically, yes, this is supported, this isn't. And I think both projects even go down to the level of, you know, sometimes the version, because a lot of times vendors will make the same model number router over consecutive years, but that the guts change from year to year because they upgrade it with different chipsets and things. So very detailed,
and
which is great.
You very often, what a vendor goes after is, who can sell me the cheapest chipset?
Yeah, exactly.
And we're talking about like 5 cents. Is it 5 cents cheaper? I buy it and put it in the device.
Right. Yeah.
So you'll see series of devices which change. They go from Broadcom to Atheros to whatever, and back to Broadcom, and you know, it just changes over time.
Right, right. So since we're on the topic of kind of seeing if, I guess we're really going down the road of how do you get started with this, right? So the first step obviously is to see if your device is supported, and then maybe can you give a brief overview? I know that we're playing a little bit of inside baseball since I've worked with a lot of these devices, and I kind of skipped over maybe for people that haven't done this before. How difficult is it to get started? What do they need to do after they've checked to see that their device is supported? What are the next steps?
The next step would be to say, okay, one, you have a supported device. Two, you will go to the OpenWRT download site and download the specific pre-built firmware for that device. Then you'll just power up your router, if it's a router, and use the existing web interface from the manufacturer to uploading a new firmware, which is, in this case, the OpenWRT firmware. You'll say, flash the device. Sometimes it's a button. Sometimes it's like a dialogue or whatever you have to do. And the device will eventually reboot, and then you will have an OpenWRT enabled device. You'll either be able to log in via Telnet initially just to set the initial settings, or you can use the existing default web interface, which is currently based on a combination of UCI, which is our own created command interface for functions on the system, and the graphical web interface itself is coded up in Lua. But we are in a quite a strong process of changing things by implementing a solution based on JSON RPC and what we call UBUS.
Sounds interesting. And so I could take my my 54G that's sitting in the back room somewhere. We originally had WWDRT on it, and we did a capture portal on there where we had we basically provided Wi-Fi for a party that I threw.
Yeah.
So I could take that and reflash it with this, and then I could have a lot more than just a captured portal. Is there some sort of package system? Is there some precompiled stuff for my chip?
There's a package system. It's called OPackage. Mm-hmm. And to get to that is that one of the more recent changes is that when you work with OpenWRT as a power user, mm-hmm. you will go in to say, okay, I need to compile a specific firmware on my own. So you will have a built environment, and we've created a solution where we simply have a packaging system, which is based on feeds. Mm-hmm. So you can add or remove feeds depending on what you need. You can have a local feed which contains packet sources. And these will be pulled into the build process and then built into the image. And so you will have, at the end, you will have a custom-built image with specifically those packages that you need. But you'll, on top of that, still have a functionality that you can install new packages or remove packages depending on your need, but also on the resources in the specific system.
Now, the build environment, are you talking about a cross-compiling situation so that I have to do it on like an x86 box and I have something set up and then I'm building? Yeah. Okay.
What we have is we usually, I run it on Linux, I built cross-compile and build images for basically all of the platforms we have. So that goes from MIPS to PPC to x86 and so forth.
If I have enough disk space, I guess is not the right word, flash space, can I just build right on the unit?
You can in some cases, but it takes some of the resources.
Yeah, I imagine it's probably not the fastest thing in the world because these things are small and embeddable and probably not very speedy because they want to be thrifty on power, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So. I know that obviously we have, like you talked about OpenVPN earlier, and I talked about Captured Portal. What are some of the other sort of like border uses for these things? Like if I've got a router and I've got a home and I've got this home router, that makes sense, right? What are some of the packages that are most applicable in that environment?
Typically what you see is peer-to-peer stuff. You have a built-in transmission client that pulls down torrents for you. You have file sharing. If you have a USB plug on the device, you can attach either just a small flash drive or a hard drive to it, and you'll be able to have basic file sharing like with SIFS and NFS. You can have a media player, like a media server, where you say with a small DLNA server running, so that you can pull music or video or whatever from the attached drive onto your TV or your laptop or whatever you imagine. Like you can run your Raspberry Pi as a media center if you want that. But you also see quite a number of people are using OpenWRT for surveillance systems. Again, you buy a cheap USB webcam, set it up wherever you want it, and connect it to a small router. That's some of the uses, more typical uses. You have a number of people who use, as I mentioned before, use OpenWRT for controlling your home environment, like lighting systems, which is quite often done with incorporating Arduino or home soldered small boards with functionality. You can use it for motor control. So if you want like a small electrical motor on a lamp to be able to move it around, you'll be able to do that. You'll have to do a little bit of coding or scripting to have it to work, but it is possible and people are doing it.
I also saw, if I got this right, I saw support for things like mesh routing. We had the guys that did the mesh potato on a couple of years ago. Is this on par with that, or do they have some advantages over what you can do with OpenWRT?
Runs OpenWRT underneath.
It's not a competing then. Okay.
No, awesome. No, not at all. It's one of the developers is a very good friend of mine, you'll see in terms of mesh networking, one of the more well-known solutions is Freifunk. Which is based on OLSR, but you also have a lot of solutions which are based on the Batman protocol, and they all run on top of OpenWRT. You have an annual event, which in Europe called Battle Mesh, which just had its sixth edition this year, where people get together and kind of try to see. Or try to experiment with what mesh protocol actually performs the best in certain conditions. And they use a reference system based on OpenWRT.
And so now I've got to ask, because you apparently have a lot of different projects using this. What's the secret to the success of this project? Why has it gotten such heavy play and lots of participants?
I think... in some ways, the success is about having a fairly stable core group over a long time. And at the same time, realizing that why should we stay with the intended solution when we instead can actually just extend and in some ways... create new possibilities. And I think this dynamic between a fairly stable core developer group, which is always open for new individuals coming in, a common goal with let's see how far we can extend this technological direction. is probably a good answer.
And how is that group managed? It sounds like herding cats. So I'm wondering how you actually can pull this off, because you're probably across multiple continents too, right?
Yeah, we're quite a lot on IRC. We meet up once in a while in real life. Typically at some of the bigger events, it's like we have a strong attendance at the Chaos Communication Congress in Germany. Mm-hmm. But also FOSDEM, and once in a while we show up to, or some of us show up to events in the U.S. And across the world. We've had members of the developer group attending events in Taiwan and Australia, and you know, so we get around.
And is this committee directed, I should say, or is there a benevolent dictator for life that sort of is the overall?
No. Mind? One of the reasons for success is that we from that the OpenWRT core developer group has from the onset on been aware that consensus is needed. Mm. We cannot have a dictator. There was never one individual who started the project. I think if we go back to the originals and look in the old history books of OpenWRT, it was like officially started by three individuals. And mm-hmm. so in that sense, it's not just one individual who drives, it's the whole developer group as such. And the developer group as such go into a process where we discuss quite often on a daily basis certain topics and we reach a consensus on what direction we're going in.
Okay, so I'm also wondering then, how do people like Linksys and these other hardware vendors feel about this project? I mean, did you have ongoing relationships with them?
Yes and no. In terms of relations, we have with some companies, we have or manufacturers of hardware, we have a very good relations. Some companies we have, let's say, strained relations, which changes over time. And, mm-hmm. and some companies we don't have any relationships to at all. But in generally, we have a tendency to find OpenWRT source code in a lot of places where we haven't been told they are.
That actually, I want to touch this briefly before we have to wrap the show up. But so the reason that Linksys had to open source their release, you want to talk a little bit about how that happened?
It was that they had to comply with the license. And it was realized that license is actually legal and that it holds in court. And they ended up doing agreeing on a settlement that they had to release it and make it available because they used it. And it was public knowledge, and it took a bit of push and shove, but it's a reality that it is still highly problematic for a lot of companies to actually adhere to the requirements of the GPL license, as an example. They have to be reminded. And we have organizations like GPLviolations.org, which help companies and manufacturers be reminded that they should adhere to the license.
So I think it's simple to say that OpenWRT wouldn't have existed without that particular release then, right?
It's a question. You would never be able to know, because a couple of the very early developers were involved in TiVo hacking. So it might have been something else than the source code from Linksys, which had started it. But there was like in those like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, you had this whole like bubbling of, hey, we have these smart devices and we really want to do something with them. And I think that in some way they had gone in either or direction. In this case, it was, or it is possible to say that it got started with the Linksys sources.
Wow. And so what's your community like? I mean, you must have public code repositories and maybe public bug tracking system.
Yeah. Yep. In that way, it's a very classical system. We have the source code is publicly available either via SVN or Git. There is a bug tracking system, a ticket system. There is a way of submitting patches. There is user forums, and there are a number of IRC chat channels. Another part is that OpenWRT a few years ago transformed itself into a nonprofit organization by joining Software and Public Interest, which is an umbrella nonprofit organization. And in that way, we also able to accept donations from individuals and companies. So there is a number of different ways to interact with OpenWRT.
And other than this, you said this Mesh Fest or whatever you call it. Battle Mesh. Are there other? Do you have other meetups, or is it just merely your adjacent meetup and other things?
Yeah, usually we have a number of developers who attend various events. I myself been at some of the embedded conferences in Europe and also the Chaos Communication Congress. I know some of them are the US-based or Canadian-based developers go to the similar events over there. And I think there's a pretty good chance if you go to an event which is in base focused on embedded systems or has it as a subtopic and with a strong interest in open solutions, then there will be one or more OpenWRT developers there.
Cool. And just a little bit about portability of the build environment. Is it Linux specific, or can I run it on my OS X laptop here, or how portable is it?
I know there are a couple of people who actually have a build system running on OS X.
Mm, cool.
But it is... I have to admit, it is easier to set up on Linux.
Yes, but I was presuming you have some Linux box somewhere, which I don't. But I have a free BSD and I have OS X, and that's pretty much my my limited access. Yeah. Of course, you know, there's always VirtualBox. I can always drop it in there instead.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time. Is there anything else you want our audience to make sure they know before we have to get rid? Before we have to let you go.
Maybe that we have OpenWRT is always moving ahead, and we have some really interesting developments coming, both in our upcoming release Barrier Breaker, but also in the future. And we are extending our support for platforms and targets. And as you mentioned with the Arduino John, it's really an interesting world out there. And again, keep the eye out for interesting new audio-based devices, because there are some very, very highly interesting things coming out.
And what kind of people are you looking most for, the people you have the greatest shortage about in order to help along with the project?
It's difficult to say. I think I'm always asking, okay, what do you want to do? What do you feel is right for you to do? If you're interested in a project like OpenWRT, and you're interested in more generally in what we still call embedded systems, what do you really want to do? What makes you happy? Mm-hmm. If you want to translate the web interface, it's cool. It's great. If you want to add patches for kernel code, it's great. If you want to work on a specific package, you really want to maintain a package that you either need or you just simply like, then it's great. So it's more a question about what do you want to do with that potential which is contained in OpenWRT.
One of the things I didn't hear you mention was testers. I'm assuming since there's so many devices, are you looking for people to test this on obscure devices?
Yeah. Yeah, usually what we do is there enough? Like when we push out a release candidate for a new stable release. Then we'll say on our mailing list and on our ISC channel, say, okay, there's these images, please download them and check them out. Or if there is not a pre-built image, build one for your device and see what happens. And if it goes bonkers, come back to us. If it goes good, come back to us, because we really enjoy and we really need that feedback. So but we have a very broad community which are very involved in testing. So it's but again, there's always use and need for more testing.
Sure. You mentioned audio. Keep your eye on kind of an audio-oriented device. Do you have anything else you can share with us? Because one of the things that I'm always interested in, I've tried this several times to come up with something that would do this, is kind of a Sonos-type device where you could have multiple devices playing the same audio in sync in different rooms. Is that... I'm just kind of curious, what's this? You're teasing us with this audio device information. I want to know more.
The thing is that I promise not to say, but as always. But it could be what you're talking about.
Well, I hope so.
But again, the solution you're talking about is actually already possible to build with OpenWRT.
Awesome. I will check it out.
That all sounds really awesome. Like I said, we're just about out of time, so I'm just going to have to say thank you. Oh, no. People are going to yell at me if I ask my two questions. So what's your favorite scripting language?
I would say I like batch scripting.
Oh, well, there we go. That's a different sort of answer. That's nice.
It sounds funny.
No, it's fine.
If not batch, Lua.
Ah.
Because it's a really friendly language.
That's a nice answer, too. I like that one. And we actually had the guys that developed Lua on the show many moons ago. And that's actually a sort of inside pun. And your favorite text editor?
VI. Sorry.
Okay. Well, that's okay. You can have that one. All right. Yeah. I can't win. I can't win all those. I can't win all those. All right. Yeah. The chat room just said Notepad. I don't think so. No. Anyway. So, Gregor, it's been really great to have you on to talk about OpenWRT. I'm sure a lot of people are going to go that weren't aware of this project before. Now we'll have an opportunity to figure out if this is something that they want to play with or work with or help develop with. So, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah. My pleasure. And thank you for having me.
Very good. Thank you. That was Gregers Peterson, who is representing the OpenWRT project. What do you think, Aaron?
I think it's great. I mean, as you might imagine, I mean, just with my background and working with this kind of stuff and the fact that I've used it before, I really want to go home and try uploading the OpenWRT firmware on my router and see what happens. Because that's how I roll.
yes.
No, but I mean, you know, having used DDWRT and having some problems and I don't know if I want to really do this. Now I'm actually encouraged to go home and try OpenWRT. And there's some really, really interesting projects. I mean, we talked about a couple of them. This audio thing sounds fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. There's also another one, and Wandering on the chat room has been really helpful. He's been pointing us in all sorts of interesting directions. One of the things he pointed us to is this Almond Plus Kickstarter project. You can go to Kickstarter and search for it. It's basically a home automation device, and they've recently announced that they're going to be basing the project on OpenWRT. So they're using that as the base, just as our guest pointed out, is that a lot of people use this as the base and then go off and do other things because it works really well for embedded. They've got kind of all the kinks figured out, or a lot of the kinks, because people have tried to run this on so many different platforms. I can see the benefit now of using it even for non-routing or non-wireless things, you know, as a shortcut mechanism to say, hey, look, OpenWRT runs on this particular chipset with this particular configuration. And now with the abundance of these cheap, inexpensive, embedded devices that you can find all over the place, I mean, I can see this really taking off even more in the future.
Well, yeah, that's a really good point, because, you know, as I'm looking, I was trying to find what to download for my VirtualBox installation yesterday to kind of start playing with this. And so I had to like look through this list of like 27 architectures, and then finally I found x86. I went, okay, that's probably the one I want. But, that means that we basically, with OpenWRT, has succeeded in doing is creating a build environment for all of those architectures, right? Because obviously they have to be able to do that. And all the little nitty-gritty, you know, what assembly code does it take to actually boot up on that machine and have the equivalent of a BIOS or whatever to get started. And That means it would be silly not to start there if you were going to take some other application. Again, like you said, not just border routing or being a web server or something. It would be silly to start from scratch on that. You might as well take and leverage off what OpenWRT has. And it sounds like they got a really good community too, and really getting some good contributions. And they work well as a committee, and they're working in public. This is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to me, you know, going back to my early fascination with open source software and with Linux specifically is just this, right? I mean, you can't run Windows on these things. It's not going to work, right? No. Microsoft isn't interested, I'm just using Microsoft. It could be any other company, but they're not interested in developing and putting development effort into customizing their code to boot off all these devices, right? But starting with Linux and then building something like OpenWRT, which uses the Linux kernel, and getting this to run on all these devices, it's the power of open source. And especially for people like me who are interested in hacking and open hardware, this is really the key that makes it all work.
Yeah, I'm also sure I didn't get a chance to ask him, but I'm pretty sure he's probably going to say that the team is pretty good about going back upstream with things that they find while they're porting software to these, 11 or 12 different architectures. So this also helps in the ultimate portability of all sorts of software that they end up reusing.
Exactly.
Very cool. All right. Well, having said all that, let's put the end of that discussion for a bit, and let's look at some of the upcoming guests. We have next week coming on, we have ZoneMinder, which is a Linux video camera security and surveillance solution, which sounds pretty cool. I think it's great for like nanny cams or security things where you draw on the screen and say, it's like this space here gets edited or modified, then send an alarm somewhere, whatever. Sounds cool. Yasi, I don't know how to pronounce that since we haven't actually talked to the person yet. It's a search engine for intranet or internet. So think of Google, but on a local scale. So you could actually set this up to crawl your web pages and have an internal search for your intranet. But apparently you can also peer-to-peer with this on internet searches. So let's say you want to build a specialized solution, at least from reading the documentation, it seems like it works this way. You want to build a specialized solution to, say, search only, say, nutrition information. You could actually peer with other people and do the crawling across many, many machines. Sounds like a lot of fun. We also have just added to the schedule BeagleBoard. So that's a single board computer. It's somewhat similar to Arduino. Actually, you're familiar with the BeagleBoard a little bit, right, Aaron?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I haven't used one, but I've talked to those guys a lot in the past, and I've seen lots of projects that do use BeagleBoard. In fact, we had one on the show. The guys that did the underwater...
Open ROV.
Yeah, Open ROV. So we had them on the show not too long ago, and they use BeagleBoard at that point for the base of that project.
Yeah, and actually I asked him, I said, well, we already had BeagleBoard on because we had Open ROV. And he says, well, I listened to that show, and they just barely touched into what this thing's capable of. So I said, yeah, let's go ahead and bring you guys on, and you can talk all about that. That'll be a lot of fun. Also, we have also just added to the schedule is Crossroads. Now, Crossroads is a fork of ZeroMQ. We had the ZeroMQ guys on. Actually, Aaron, that was a show you and I did in the studio. Was it Thomas Hatch? No, that was Salt Guy. Peter Hingens, December 21st, a couple years ago. So we had him on, and he was talking about ZeroMQ and all the design philosophy that went into that. Well, apparently there was a fork. We'll talk about we'll ask him why there was a fork, but we're going to talk about that. And ZeroMQ is also something that's being used in Salt and a bunch of other projects. We're actually using it here for my client because it made a lot of things a lot simpler to do that. So, apparently there's a different design philosophy or maybe a more enhanced design philosophy in Crossroads. So we'll talk to the lead of the Crossroads team about why he forked ZeroMQ and what he expects to get out of that. So those are the ones we have scheduled right now. I'm still looking to fill up Q4. So I'm going to keep sending out emails. If you want to see my progress on that, go to twit.tv/floss. That's our homepage for this show. And from there, you'll find the big spreadsheet linked from there about people we have that we're considering or trying to schedule. If you have a project that's not on that list and you would like to see them on Floss Weekly, you guys drive this show. I only put people on the show that people write and say we want this on. So the easiest way to do that, though, is for you to email the project leader and have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, and that's how they get on the short list. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus and Floss Weekly on Twitter. We have both of those. We have a live chat room. We took a couple questions from that this week. That's at live.twit.tv. We normally tape at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. Again, check the big spreadsheet to see what the schedule is for that. Or you can watch my my Google Plus postings and my Floss Weekly Twitter postings, and you can find out what's actually coming up. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, but that's mostly just a place where I'm dumping links to my Google Plus postings, because I put about 5 to 10 things on Google Plus every day. A lot about nutrition, a lot about open source, a lot about just humor. I kind of like to mix it up a little bit. So I got about 23,000 followers there now on Google Plus. So I'm pretty happy with that. So people apparently are paying attention to what I am saying. I don't have anything to plug right now. I'm planning on being here at this mic for the next few weeks, so I'm not going anywhere immediately. But through the October, November, December region, I'm going to be like on 3 back-to-back cruises. So you won't be seeing a lot of me in fourth quarter, but we'll try to sneak it in there, here and there. Aaron, what do you want to plug today?
So you can follow me on Google Plus, Facebook, or Twitter. Generally, I hang out on Google Plus, though. So if you want to actually engage and have a conversation with me, or you have a comment about something I talked about today, you don't know what you're talking about, you know, you're full of BS, just go ahead and put that on Google Plus, and I can actually respond there. It's where I hang out most of the time. In fact, I posted this thing yesterday about this third grader who, I don't know if you saw it, had all these goals for third grade. It was great. His number one goal, learn the gases that are pushed from a hypernova. That's his goal. I love his last – one of his last ones is eat a rack of ribs that's covered in bacon. I want to find this kid and just give him money. It's like you are gold for me. But anyway, that's the kind of stuff I post about, along with all kinds of stuff about open source software, Android, stuff going on in Google. So if you want to, you know what I'm curious about in those types of arenas, you can follow me on Google Plus. Also, coming up next week, if you are going to be in San Francisco for – Oracle Open World, come find me. I'll be at the NetApp booth front and center. Just go down to Moscone South, take a left, and you'll see the big NetApp banner. Come on over and say hi. I'll be wearing a football jersey. You can find out more about that. A football referee jersey, I should say. So I'll look like a referee. I'll have a whistle. I'll be doing, you know, the holding calls and all that. But I'll be in the NetApp booth. And if you're a fan of the show, or if you want to just come say hi and I don't know if I'll have time to get coffee. I would offer that, but I'm going to be pretty busy. But definitely come and find me. Say hi and introduce yourself. I'd love to meet some people if you're going to be at Oracle Open World.
Cool. So a little bit of cosplay for you then, huh?
A little bit of cosplay, yep. And actually, if you're on the line live, or if you're watching this and want to see me in more shows, I'll be on This Week in Google a little bit later today. So you can either watch that live or catch it in replay.
Cool. I saw a lot of cosplay last weekend, of course, because I was at Dragon Con. Speaking of Dragon Con, also, I was on 5 panels, and one of the panels I did was the art of the interview. So I got to talk about some of the stuff we use behind the scenes here to make these shows work, including my fairly innovative technique of asking our guests for a list of questions that we can use as a go-to list in case we get stuck. We don't need the answers. We'll get those in real time. But I actually have the guests always provide a list of questions. And it does work really well, because the guests know a lot better what they want to be asked than I would know. And I never had enough time to research for this show. So it's really kind of nice to do that. So
that's great.
Yeah. So I got to talk about that. I got to sit on a really esteemed panel of other big podcasters. It was pretty nice. Tom Merritt was supposed to be on that, but it was too tight of timing for him to do his Sword and Laser live show. So he had to back out of that. But that's okay. What was also I going to say about that? Nope, I think that was all I was going to say about that. Oh yeah, the podcast track leader said, "Why aren't you on more podcast panels this year?" And I said, I submitted 4 or 5, but you only accepted one. So I guess the question would be to you, why am I not? He says, no, we'll have you on more next year. So yeah, that's great. So I'll be on the podcast track next year again and have some good timing there. All right, I think we ran this show a little over time, so I think it's about time to wrap up and say we'll see you again next time on Floss Weekly.